Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. Broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter DeRaglia, a little late on the draw.
That's all right, Walt. That's all right.
All right. You know what? I thought that of course, was Krantz, fantastic song. I thought that was the one that built into the crescendo. And I was waiting for the crescendo.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
I was immersed in the next topic, and I was reading, and then young Owen comes in to save the day and go, X-Nay!
You know, it was already, we don't like to play the whole song, but we were getting into that minute. I know you're grooving and you're jiving to it, and I saw your head bopping, but, it's...
You see my head bopping?
I saw your head bopping,
nice.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Walt.
No, it isn't about our show, Chris.
What is it
more
about
than any other show I've ever heard or watched?
Yeah.
Our seamless intros.
Seamless.
When you start the beginning of the show, it's like clockwork.
Like,
you nail it every time.
Like we've been doing this for 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what did you? I don't even remember. Did you talk about where we're broadcast on?
We might have to play that back later. Let's just assume that
right.
I did.
Okay, perfect.
And we're here to fill the listenership in with knowledge.
By the way, you are Walter DeRaglia.
I am the Old Street Price Guide Advisor. I think I said, that's what we didn't do.
We didn't
introduce you.
Right.
No, I did me.
Oh, did
Chris,
you? I did me. I've heard that.
I just haven't done you yet.
I know. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I can do myself.
Right on.
Wait a second.
I've heard that too.
I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
Yes, and we are nailing this start
seamless,
to this Shecky-less show. Shecky is AWOL today.
Shecky is no longer.
You know what?
What's
don't,
that?
Don't share this with anybody.
What is
okay.
it?
We're going to keep
it. You can tell me a secret?
Between me and you.
Between you and me and the three listeners we have.
I think you may have found a girlfriend.
Get out of town.
This is the rumor.
Okay.
All right? So we never know, though.
Well good for him.
Good for him.
Good for him. You know, girlfriend, boyfriend, as long as he has partnership, I'm okay with that.
I hear you.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, you know what I'm naming her?
What are you naming her?
Yoko.
Breaking up the band.
All right. Listen, we start every show.
With a sponsor.
And this week's sponsor for Chris's upcoming New This Week segment is none other than our friend Danny Champ. Over across the pond at Calf Comics.
At what?
Calf Comics. CAF.
Candy Apple Fox. Yes. Yeah,
so
but you're
I'm
right,
already
it is
blowing.
Oh, no, you're right. It is Calf. Yeah, you're right.
And Danny's, I think, starting a Kickstarter on a new project.
Is he now?
Yeah, it's. I think the Sci My Lie issue number
that's
one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's a cool little. You know, one thing about Danny Champ. You know, say what you will about the guy.
I don't try to say too much. But anyway, go on.
He's pretty innovative cat.
He
if
is.
You go on
he
his site. That's some pretty
dude.
Funky ass
yeah,
stuff. That
I agree.
He's got going
I agree.
He's so.
And you know what? He's British, so he's a great guy.
Yeah,
I say.
Head on over to Calf Comics. I don't even know where the heck the website is.
That's a great plug. You got one there.
Calf Comics for the Sci My Lie issue number one Kickstarter. Check it out. I think you'll be really impressed, and hopefully you'll be able to support
it. You know, I've actually supported a couple of Kickstarters now, so you know what? I may go on there and actually support the guy.
All right.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Why not? Yeah,
wonderful.
I got apparently I got money that I don't know what to
money
do with.
To burn.
Yeah, money to burn. All right. Listen, every Wednesday, we do like to talk about new comics that are hitting the stores, because we do like to champion the local comic book shop.
That we do.
We do. So we're hitting the stores new this week. And I'd just like to go through a smattering.
Smattering.
Of
why don't
a
you,
few different.
Take us through a
few
smattering.
Different issues here. Issues.
Issues.
You
so
know,
we,
I used to have a grade. In grade eight, I had a teacher that used to always call them tissues.
Tissues.
Not tissue, but, you know, tissue.
Tissue.
Right. Issue.
Was he British?
It was.
Or did he just have a speech impediment?
Did he talk with a lisp?
Okay.
All right. Listen, Hellblazer, number four. The DC Universe Rebirth, the Hellblazer, number four. This is with Simon Oliver and artist Moritat. And we find our intrepid hero, John Constantine, tied up in the first page with a guy walking around with a shotgun. I picked up this book because
normal
everyday
start
things
to a
for,
day
yeah
for
yeah
him.
For him yeah no big deal yeah yeah no big deal. I picked up this book because I really liked the cover because he's teaming up with Swamp Thing in this one.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a good cover. Swamp Thing is kind of dressed like Constantine with, you know, the trench coat and the white shirt and the cigarette coming out of the mouth, which I don't really think Swamp Thing would ever have a cigarette coming out of his mouth. He'd probably burn up, wouldn't you think?
No, I think he would. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Now, you've hit the nail on the horn.
I have.
A little bit here.
On the horn.
On the horn.
Okay.
And when you said, I picked up this book because I really like the cover.
Yeah, well, you know, that I do that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but not only you, you know, you and me championed the local comic book shop, covers still sell comics.
Absolutely.
Right?
Covers sell comics today. Comics covers sell comics from 20 years ago.
From
60 years ago. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So check out the cover to Hellblazer number 4 at your local comic book shop.
Perfect. All right. Now, this is I got a problem.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. My problem is this. Civil War 2 number 7 comes out today.
Wait a minute.
Okay, wait. Backing it up. Beep, 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 boop.
So, did you say Civil War 7?
Civil War 2.
Oh, Civil War 2.
Number 7.
Number 7.
Yeah, correct.
So, it's the second
Civil War
of the Civil War miniseries,
correct.
The seventh issue of.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
Correct.
Go ahead.
So, here's my problem. I got a problem.
Go ahead.
Here's my problem.
Hey, Chris,
yeah.
Tell me your problem.
Got a problem. Civil War 2, number 7 has come out, and I can't talk about it because I don't want to give away any spoilers. So,
which is, of course, why you picked it.
Well, there's that, but it's a cool book.
Right.
Because there's this character called Ulysses that has this power to sort of see into the future of timelines that are going to happen. And so basically because of this, you know, Hawkeye killed Bruce Banner. Spider-Man could possibly be killing Captain America.
Ooh.
He's going to be like facing trial or something in this one. I don't want to talk too much about it. I've looked at the first few pages.
Yeah.
I can't even talk about that.
Oh,
I can't even.
Don't, Chris, don't. Listen.
You know.
Listen, there's more than one way to skin,
okay.
to skin a raccoon.
All right.
Okay?
Right.
And we can talk about how great the cover is.
It's a great cover.
It's got, I think, Justin Berber on the front.
I don't know if that's.
No?
It could be Justin Berber. I don't know.
No, it's got a guy with a hood on the front.
It's, yeah, I'm not too sure who that is.
But it's got a good-looking cover.
Good-looking cover. It's a good-looking book.
The thing I like about that Civil War, it's got that good-looking, strong mast.
Good, strong mast cover.
See that mast?
Yeah, I like
that
it.
Strong
I like it.
Mast?
Yeah, I like, you know? Yeah, I know how much you like the mast.
Yes, I do.
Standing at attention.
You know, upright.
Upright.
And,
erect.
Makes it very noble, very powerful.
Noble.
And
nobleman.
Makes you want to read it. And I also like the gloss of the cover.
It's a good, great gloss. Great gloss.
I'm trying to help the book out here, Chris.
You know, it's a good book. Okay, I'm gonna say two words.
Two words.
Talking about the opening of the book.
Uh-huh.
Hulk, Wolverine.
Right on.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Right on.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Right on.
Which is weird because Hulk's supposed to be dead.
Right.
Because Bruce Banner's dead, but now all of a sudden we're seeing the Hulk.
I'm gonna say two words to entice the people to want to buy this and read it.
And what would that? What would those words be?
Worth. You'll be thrilled and amazed when you take this expensive comic and you open it up and you check out what's on page one, Chris.
Those are way more than two words.
No, but what I'm saying is you'll get your money's worth when you look and you open it up and you... You'll have Chris's
That's so true.
Reaction.
So
right
true.
There.
So
hey,
true. Yeah.
Civil War.
It's almost like you're seeing it twice.
Civil War, Volume 2, Number 7,
like
at your local comic book shop.
New York, New York. The city is so nice they named it twice. All right, listen, let's move right along here. Cage. Now, this has got to be a book. Are you reading this book?
No, I'm not.
Well, of all the books I've ever thought that you should read in your lifetime, you should be reading Cage.
I didn't like the first one. I had a look
Did
at it.
Did you read it?
It was too simplistic, the art.
Yeah.
I couldn't get by the art.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially
on
the cover.
I'll give you that. The art is a little... It's by Genndy Tartakovsky, who is a famous animator who's worked for a number of different hit shows, Powerpuff Girls and...
Like, I watch Powerpuff
Okay,
Girls.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, he's been around for a little while.
Right.
He's the same guy that directed the Hotel Transylvania movies.
Like, I watched that.
You might with your kids. You have a family.
Yeah, I know. But I'm more into, like, an Esad Ribbich style. What's his name?
Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Okay, but hold on. What I like about this book, I read the first one. What I like about this book is that it actually is meant to take place in the 1970s.
Right on.
So they're taking a time period. So, for example, in the first issue, it had, like, you know, Seed Defenders issue, you know, whatever it was, 47 or something like that. Right? So
I'm trying to do 70s.
I like that. I get it. Right on.
Right on.
Power to the people.
Yeah.
I do like this book. I like the colors. I like the art style. If you're a traditionalist, as far as your comics goes, you won't like it. So if you are like Walt, you probably will not like this book. However, if you have somewhat of an open mind, you might actually enjoy it.
Hey, listen, U.S. Thanksgiving is coming up, so don't you be no jive turkey. Head into your local comic book shop and check out Cage number 2.
All right. Let's move right along here to let's go back.
How far do you want to go back?
Let's go back.
Way back.
To DC Universe Rebirth Blue Beetle number 3. I'm saying going back because I started with a DC book. I mentioned two Marvels. Now I'm going back to a DC again.
I like it. I like your style. There's a pattern there.
Pattern. So this is bun. This is done by Keith Giffen and Scott Collins. So of course, Blue Beetle is a popular character. That
Chris,
hold on.
I got to call you.
Hold on. What?
Is Blue Beetle a popular character?
You know, Blue Beetle's been around since, what, the 1940s?
Yeah, okay.
So an incarnation of some kind.
Blue Beetle, to me, is a property that somebody owns that doesn't want to give up, so they keep throwing him against the wall, and he never sticks. That's what Blue Beetle is to
me. But
Blue Beetle also was a hell of a comic shop up in Barrie when my good buddy Dave
used to be.
Used to be.
I don't know what it's like now, but I haven't been there in a while.
Well, it's not Blue Beetle anymore.
No, yeah. Anyways.
I mean, it's way better now, but I'm
is
saying.
It?
Oh, yeah. You kidding me? They actually have books up there now.
Oh, that's good.
But not to say that Dave never had books when he was up there.
No, of course
not. My point
not.
Is, Dave loved Blue Beetle so much, he named a comic book shop after it.
Right, and there are a lot of Blue Beetle fans.
Yes.
And I kid, you know, Blue Beetle up in Barrie, I was there years ago with you once, I think. Mm-hmm. Great shop.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? So Blue Beetle, the character, I only know one guy, but he's a huge Blue Beetle fan. Actually, I know two. Dave Mackey and McGinley.
Yeah.
So you know what? There's something about the character that people love. It's an interesting book. What I find interesting about this is there's actually two Blue Beetles.
There is?
Well, yes. There's the Ted Kord Blue Beetle. Uh-huh. And then there's the I don't know who this guy is. What's
Chris,
his name?
Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Which one is bluer?
Which one's bluer?
Yeah.
It's a great question. I'd have to say the old one.
Yeah.
Old Ted Kord is bluer.
He's bluer.
Yeah.
Okay. It's good to know.
What's this guy's name again? Javier or something like that.
Xavier Hollander.
Sure. Yeah, I don't remember. Anyways.
The Happy Hooker.
Hey,
Blue Beetle number three. You head into your local comic book shop, you pick up number three, and you decide whether Blue Beetle is good or not.
Okay, one more Marvel book, because I just can't believe this is actually a comic book.
Uh-huh.
Disney Kingdom's Enchanted Tiki Room.
Oh, Chris.
Have you ever been to Walt Disney World?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Did you go to the Enchanted Tiki Room?
No, I didn't.
Attraction, I'll call it.
I didn't. I went in 07.
Well, okay, it's been there since like...
Oh, forever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Since the park opened. Uh-huh. And it's one of these things where you go into this big room.
Yeah.
As if it was enchanted.
Right.
And all these birds start to sing. Mm-hmm. And then the birds start to sing. And then like the... You know, like the walls and the tiki idols start to sing. And
how
then,
did I
like,
miss that? How did I miss
it's
that?
In the tiki, 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 uh-huh. tiki room, tiki, tiki in the tiki, 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 tiki. You know, one of those kind of things. And so it's actually a fun attraction. I just don't know how they managed to get a book out of it. But clearly someone's picking it up because it's still selling.
Wow. Yeah, still selling at number two.
Number two.
Going strong. Enchanted Tiki Room number 2 is available at your local comic book shop today. Check that out. Okay. And if you're ever in Disneyland,
You got to see it. It's fun.
Make sure
it's
you hit the enchant tiki room.
Okay, two more books here I want to talk about. I know we're probably running a little late on this. Futurama, number 81, still going strong.
Wow.
Speaking of books that are still going strong, Futurama, awesome, by Bongo Comics.
Bongo. Futurama. Now, Chris, I don't know stuff about this stuff, okay?
Yeah.
I know lots of stuff about stuff.
You know, but you also don't know lots about
stuff. But I don't know lots of stuff, especially about this stuff. So you're going to set me right now. And
I will
perhaps,
try.
And you know how it is? You know when the one guy, Chris, asks a question that half the room thinks he's really stupid for asking?
Right.
But then the other half is grateful that he asked it because they were too embarrassed to
absolutely
not admit that they didn't
know.
You know,
as a teacher, I get that all the time.
So this is for the other half.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. So Futurama has nothing to do with The Simpsons.
Correct.
Okay. I didn't know that until recently.
Okay.
Okay. So this is just like, it's just the Simpsons art and the Simpsons creators.
You know what Futurama is like? Futurama is kind of like, it's
Jetsons and Flintstones.
Jetsons and Flintstones.
Totally it's different characters.
Different worlds. One set in the future, one in Flintstones, one was set in the past, except for Simpsons is set 10
Did
today.
They ever cross over?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. It's a great series. Futurama is awesome. I love it.
Wonderful. All right. Futurama number 81. I felt like, Chris, I'm going to walk out of here like
I
felt like I learned something.
At least I think Futurama has crossed over with Simpsons. I don't remember.
Well, that
now.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, perfect.
Well, what
good,
matters
good.
Is that they're not really of the same. And
no, they're not. Right. No, you're right.
Okay. Check Futurama out at your local comic book shop.
Okay. And finally, I want to talk about Captain Canuck number 10 by Chapter House Comics. Yeah!
Yay! That's the gallery. We're in a live studio.
Yeah,
audience.
Love the cover. Love the cover. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a quick trivia.
Yeah.
What is the cover paying homage to?
What's the cover paying homage to? Well, that's obvious.
Okay.
Well, I'm not going to tell you though. Because,
no, I wouldn't.
I have no clue.
Okay, Alpha Flight number 1.
Oh, right.
Because in Alpha Flight number one, so on this cover, he says, one side, heroes, this is a job only
for Northgard.
For Northgard, whereas it was Alpha Flight, right?
Yeah. I met the creator of Northgard at the Schuster Awards.
Did you know?
Yeah. A few weeks ago. Nice guy.
What's his name?
Is it Shane Bloom?
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's Mark Shane Bloom.
Okay.
Oh my God, I forgot his name already. But he was there. He actually came. He picked up a Hall of Fame award.
Oh, did he really? That's awesome.
For Northgard and a lot of the other work that he did in the 80s and 90s and stuff.
Cool. That's
so
awesome.
That's pretty cool. Now, because Chris, I'm connected with the Captain Canuck people, the Chapter House people.
Right.
I'm the guy that they don't invite to meetings.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I'm the guy that, I'm that guy.
Okay.
So, and they were telling me months ago about how they're trying to create a Captain Canuck universe.
Oh, okay,
how they're trying to get all those other iconic, I don't want to do another spoiler alert on another iconic Canadian hero of the 70s that they're going to try to immerse into the
Does it sound like Schmulverine?
No, like Canadian. Created by Canadians in thing.
Created in the 70s.
In the 70s.
Oh, interesting.
And this character, spoiler alert, beep, beep,
beep,
boop,
beep, beep, boop, boop, boop.
I won't tell the character's name, but he was in our good friend Vince Marchesano worked on that magazine Orb.
Oh, the Orb.
Yeah,
right.
Remember
right.
that character,
cool. yes,
that Canadiana
yes.
character?
Yes, I do know.
Anyway, they're handily, nicely, slowly, and thoroughly.
Handily, slowly, nicely, and thoroughly.
I think all those things.
Good. I like it. Yeah.
Stress my point.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why I said them.
Okay.
In that sequence.
It. Okay. That's good.
They're trying to build a nice little Captain Canuck universe, like a universe of heroes, within that Canadiana realm of Captain Canuck. I think it's fantastic.
Right.
And
right.
I think we should all go in and check out Captain Canuck number 10 at our local comic book shop.
All right. I like it. Well, you know what? We have probably bored our listeners to death, so let's wake them up a little bit with a little bit of Krantz.
Oh.
So the old Spider-Man, let's get them, boys.
Nice, Chris. That's some good Krantz.
Good Krantz
there for you. Hey, listen, that's a musical segue takes us into industry news. And I got a phone call there while the song was going on.
Oh, yeah?
From Danny Champ.
Oh, nice.
You bloomin' idiot. How can you get it wrong?
Oh, well, what did he say?
Well, he said we got it all wrong about his
Candy Apple Fox?
His Candy Apple Fox.
Oh, what was wrong with it?
And then I started asking, you know, how to say it correctly.
Right.
And then the line cut out.
Oh.
So this is going to be even worse now.
Okay, all
so,
right.
So, hey,
right.
Industry News is brought to you by Candy Apple Fox's...
some website
some
somewhere.
Some website
yeah,
that we
yeah.
don't know how to
fair
find.
Fair enough, fair enough.
And he's having a Kickstarter, and he's a heck of a guy. So,
is he having a Kickstarter for sure?
Yeah, he's having a Kickstarter
nice,
for sorry. Sure. For
you
these,
know, I think
Sigh My Lie, issue number one.
I think we should donate.
I think so,
I
too.
I think we should, yeah.
What's
yeah.
the minimum?
Probably like a dollar.
I demand minimum.
Don't worry. When you hit that, luckily, that's what you get with this show. All right, listen.
Yeah.
Let's, we got to talk
you
about
know, overachieving. That's for others, Chris. We don't stress that
we
here.
We have
at Comic
never
Culture.
Been accused of overachieving.
Never
no.
been accused of
no,
overachieving.
No, I'm sure someone will talk about the fact that I didn't know Blue Beetle's
yeah.
second name or yeah. twice
namely
removed.
Our editor in chief.
Probably.
Do you know you're doing a good show
yeah.
when the first few words to the comment field on Comic Culture is, where do I start?
Where do I start?
Yeah. So you know
yeah.
you
quality.
Hit the nail on
quality.
The head.
Yeah, that's right.
Listen, let's talk about. Well, first of all, these cards, these
are we talking about Pokemon?
Yeah, Pokemon. A card sold for $55,000.
Okay, so hold on. Beep, beep, boop, beep. Boop. So I was recently involved, let me say,
uh-huh.
with an auction out of the States
yeah.
with about cards.
Yeah.
And, you know, Babe Ruth cards selling for... You know, $55,000, $60,000, $100,000. Ty Cobb card sold for one of the lucky seven cards sold for $144,000.
Did any of those Benchwarmer cards sell?
No, they're hot.
They are.
But they didn't sell very well.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But big money for
big,
those other
big
cards.
Money, big for money those for those
cards,
other ones,
right.
yeah. So big money for cards from like the 1910s and 1920s and 30s.
Yeah, they're everywhere, those 1910s cards.
Yeah, they really are, yeah. Yeah, yeah you know.
You can't knock a century home down without finding buckets
of them yeah, that's
in
right.
the walls. You know,
there was even a Tim Horton card that sold for $9,000 on
yeah.
there.
Hey, would it be interesting to know if the Tim Horton company bought that card?
That'd be great. That'd yeah. be interesting. I would like to know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but here's what I don't understand.
Right.
And which, you know, you can fill in the blank.
I'll fill you in, Chris.
I'm sure you will. There's a lot that I don't understand, but I really don't understand about this. And that is a rare Pokemon card selling for $55,000. U.S.
Yeah.
U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I guess, graded 9 out of 10, which for cards is unheard of.
That's hard to get, yeah.
Yeah. It's the Japanese promo card, so all the, it says illustrator on it. It's a foil Pikachu,
right?
And it's got you know Japanese writing on it and stuff like that. It's for play in Japan, obviously. I guess it's the scarcity of this. Now, Heritage Auctions sold this card, and what they're saying is you know especially with the popularity of the Pokemon Go game. You know, right, it just kind of raises awareness to Pokemon. Now, what I will say, though, is this. What I will say, though, is because, Chris, on some of my posts on Comic Book Daily about comic book values and about collecting and investing in collecting tips, I've often talked about the nostalgia cycle.
Right. Okay. Yes, yes.
Now, what I'm going to say right now is the Pokemon is entering the very first few years of the nostalgia cycle. Because Pokemon came out 97, 98 in Japan. I think it hit 99 huge, right? Now, that is basically 20 years ago almost.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, the way the nostalgia cycle generally works is it starts about 20 years from the beginning peak of the property.
Because basically people who are buying it when they're kids – now they get out of, you know, they're done being a kid, they get out of school, they start making money, and now they have some disposable income.
Now it's that old adage, now they're searching back for their youth.
Right.
If you wanted to be more jaded, it's like, by now they're married, stuck in a miserable job, have a kid, looking to escape any way they can from the realities of life.
That's right.
You know, and they go back to their youth. They go back to when they were 10, 12, 14 years old and having the time of their lives trading, playing Pokemon and stuff like that. And so this whole nostalgia cycle.
Okay, but hold on, hold on, hold on.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So this is 20, this card's, let's say, 20 years old.
Yeah, almost.
Who in their, let's say the kid was 8 or 10 years old when they got the card, and now they're, so let's say 30. They're 30.
Yeah.
And so who in their, when they're late 20s or early 30s has a spare $55,000 to spend
on a card? Well, there's always people that are doing well. There's always.
Okay, but is it them or is it some rich millionaire who's 80 years old?
It could be that too. It could be a company that knows the nostalgia cycle is coming
and wants to cash in and are
buying up this stuff because maybe 10 years from now this stuff is going to be going for $150,000.
So what you're saying saying is anybody that has Pokemon cards, start getting them graded because you could be in for a windfall.
Yeah. Right? Anybody that has any Pokemon properties, any of the old, you know, like remember All the properties have gone through it. Transformers in the 80s. What's the other one? G.I. Joe.
Star Wars.
All that stuff. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, all that stuff has enjoyed the benefits of a nostalgia boost, right?
And
I think Pokemon is entering in that right now. Fantastic. Fascinating. I love it. You know what? And you know what? For us, we were selling Pokemon at Big B in 1999 when it was gangbusters.
I remember that.
And what we always thought Pokemon was a feeder to Magic.
Right.
So you get the 10-year-old, 9-year-olds playing Pokemon for a couple of years, and then they graduate to Magic the Gathering. Now,
I never saw that it would be like a continuation.
On their own. Nobody ever thought it would last as long. Yeah. So kudos to everybody that makes Pokemon because
the
property definitely has legs.
Perfect.
All right. Let's stay, Chris, on the collectability investment
Let's do that. Okay.
Let's talk about something more near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
And that's original art.
I love original artwork. I love, started collecting original artwork way back in the early 90s. Actually, I think 89 was the first piece or 88. No, 85. Ugh, I'm dating myself here. I wish I could date myself more often. Anyways.
Imagine all the money you'd save.
Yeah, I really would be. Original artwork, So this is crazy. Original Tintin artwork selling for 1.55 million euros. So it's about 1.64 million U.S.
dollars.
Dollars. Mm-hmm. Highest sum ever earned for a single page of artwork. Single page.
Yeah.
So the covers have sold for lots of money in the past, but this is a single page of artwork that has sold for this much money. It's just crazy how this is exploding. I mean, I know that, I get it. And I get that, that original artwork is a hot commodity right now. But wow. So this original page appeared in somewhere between October 1952 and December 1953. It was collected in 1954. During the comic book Explorers on the Moon story.
Uh-huh.
So I just don't, I can't believe that, you know, I know Tintin is popular and I know the movie was made of him, but
yeah.
If you ask 100 kids in Hamilton if they've ever read a Tintin comic, most of them would say no.
Well, I think this is, you know, we're often insulated in thinking, especially with superheroes. Let's put it this way. This side of the Atlantic is ruled by superheroes.
Right.
Right. And this side of the Atlantic isn't the only place in the world that has a vibrant, active collecting community in popular culture.
Right.
And that's
right,
the key.
Yep.
It's just a little different. So what I'm trying to say is I think the money chasing this Tintin thing is purely European big money.
Right. You know, I agree.
Well-to-do people of French, you know, in Belgium and in Switzerland and France and, you know, wherever. It doesn't even have to be French, you know, because these were printed in German and all the other Spanish and all the other languages, right?
Yep.
But Tintin was such a fixture of European popular culture. Tintin, pretty well, I think Tintin, I don't know who would be bigger in Europe in that second half of the 20th century, whether it would be Tintin or Asterix and Obelix.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
But they would
agree.
Both be kind of neck and neck, I think, up there.
Yep.
Maybe Tintin
totally
even more. So you're seeing a piece like that. This is such a treasured piece of European popular culture. Popular culture. And, you know, I read once a long time ago, Chris, that, because Europeans, you know, I mean, good thing there's none of them listening.
Yeah, good
except
thing.
Perhaps
good
our,
thing.
Our friend Danny Champ.
Yeah,
but England
right.
isn't really Europe anymore,
I say.
Is it?
No,
I
it really
say.
Isn't. Thanks to Brexit.
Yeah. So there was a quote somewhere I read somewhere is where the Europeans accused superheroes of hijacking the medium.
Really?
Yeah. So what they said is the worst thing that happened in North America to the sequential art medium
was superheroes.
The superheroes. Because they basically stifled.
Well, okay,
I disagree,
on.
Obviously.
I disagree too.
But
let's not. We need to get into the history of comics and the sequential art.
CFMU, make a note. We're going to go 3 hours right now. We are extending this show.
Just saying.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you can blame superheroes. You can blame the American government if you want. You can blame Frederick Wortham if you want.
That's right. The whole seduction of the innocent era of the early
50s.
The
Senate
hearings.
Yeah. If you know what, I would even go as far as to say you can even blame EC because that's who most of those comics were. Most of those Senate hearings were about. But you know what? Don't blame superheroes because you know what? Superheroes revived the comic book history in 1939,
right?
With great comics,
yeah,
great superheroes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, you're preaching to the choir on that on that part. Great to see though that something adjacent and concurrent can be happening in Europe.
Adjacent and concurrent
at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's happening in Europe that we can kind of relate to.
What's that?
This pop culture getting record prices.
Right, absolutely.
Which is fantastic.
For sure, yeah, absolutely.
Right? So
all right.
great to see, great to hear.
Yep.
I would imagine the person that has this page probably has the rest of the damn book.
I would hope so. No, I would hope so. You know,
kudos to him.
Collecting artwork is it's a tough sell, but yeah.
Now, you know, we've touched on some cards. We've touched on some original art.
Yep, yep.
I should point out, too, that I don't think there's been ever a better time for the high-end collectible market for pure comic books.
Oh, really?
Like record prices are being set almost, you know, monthly
for,
on key issues.
That is true, yes.
And the value really goes, Chris, the value really is concentrated on, if you zero in on a few things.
Okay.
The creation of the character,
right?
Paramount, and then couple that with the grade of that issue,
right?
So, and then basically it's scarcity to the point.
Sure.
So if you have, you know, the best character out there, say Batman,
yep.
And you have the first appearance of that character, and you have, you know, the best or second or third best known copy of that thing.
Yep.
And
yep,
then it's
yep.
just, it seems like it's just a nonstop record breaking
really is.
Results.
It really is. Yeah.
Right now, as we're on the air, I think there's two huge auctions going, One at Comic Connect, one at Comic Link.
Okay, yeah.
With books like, you know, Batman number one at 8.0.
Right.
Which is for a grade on that book. That's I don't crazy. Know. I'm guessing, but it's maybe the third, fourth best copy.
So what's like, what would that, what do you think?
Right now, I think it's over 400,000 US, right? And really, the reason why Batman number one is worth so much money is it has a major first appearance.
Yep. Yep.
And it has probably the first appearance of the quintessential villain in comics.
Right. Right.
Which is the Joker.
The Joker, yeah.
Right? So the value in Batman number one is an interesting thing because it really doesn't ride on Batman.
No, not at all.
It rides on the first appearance of the Joker.
That's right, yeah. And it is number one.
And it is
it
doesn't matter so much anymore, right? Because it's not the first appearance of the character. Batman had already been going on for 12 issues in Detective Comics. And then he was so popular that they also gave him his own title, which launched at number one. So number ones are really cool when they also introduce the character.
Sure,
Action One, Hulk One, Fantastic Four One. But it doesn't really matter. When you look at Amazing Fantasy number 15, first appearance of Spider-Man,
it's
worth three times as much as Spider-Man number one.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Cool time to be active in the popular culture collecting community. Very much so. Very much kind of good times.
Absolutely. You know, it seems to just keep on rising up. I thought for a while there that there's got to be a point where the collectability of comics is going to start to get lower and lower, and it hasn't hit that yet. What's interesting is, though, is that, you know, some of the it all has peaks and valleys, right, with the collectability market. So, you know, years ago you could buy Silver Age comics at a decent price, and Bronze Age were like dirt cheap.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden Bronze Age comics and Silver Age comics started getting a little higher. Now, not that Golden Age started waning off. They didn't really go up in value as much. So now it's almost like if you want to get into older comics.
Yeah, Golden Age now is the hottest era
because it's sort of still affordable almost.
Right, that's right. In a way, relative to the rise in value of silver and bronze, people are wondering, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, this is way scarcer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's actually cheaper.
Right. Right?
So
why
am I not getting this?
Yeah, I agree. So. Anyways, let's have a quick musical interlude here. I know you're always big in the classroom there, Walt. You didn't probably never slept, but this is Spider-Man's Classroom Blues.
Classroom Blues. Sweet sounds, Chris. You know what's funny is we've blown through two-thirds of the show already.
And really haven't said much.
We haven't really said much. you know, and we're going to have to go to a two-hour show.
I think so. I think that's the next step.
Because we have so much to say.
Yeah.
But we're so bad at saying it.
Yeah, we never really get to the point. Yeah.
Yeah, we need more time. Yeah. But I think 2 hours of listening to two guys that, you know, probably Mr. Calling is
but Mr. Calling as a radio host
or as comic relief, in general, it's time well spent. But listen, that takes us to part two of industry news.
Part deux,
sponsored by, of course, Danny Champ just reserved the whole show today.
I know.
Candy Apple Fox.
Good for him.
Calf Comics.
Calf.
With his Kickstarter campaign.
Calf.
Yeah. Calf. His line is dead. I tried to call back.
Oh, you know, it's hard getting through to South
through
Africa.
To England, yeah.
Isn't he in South Africa?
No, he's back in England.
Oh, is he back?
Yeah, they kicked him out.
I'm not surprised.
It's an episode he doesn't want to talk
about.
Yeah,
don't talk. You know, if you happen to run into Danny Champ, do not ask him about that.
Hey, listen, if you're on the tube.
If you're on the telly.
And you bump into the
if
champ.
If you're on the telly.
Don't say Johannesburg. Okay, so Chris, let's talk about this is actually exciting to me.
Right.
You know, not that many things excite me, Chris.
No, I know.
This does.
Yeah, really?
Well, I was a huge, huge fan, and I read, I won't say all of them, but probably the first four Dune books.
Right, okay.
By Frank Herbert. And obviously the first one, the most important one.
Yeah.
And then probably the three sequels, because I think he had like 79 sequels.
But I think, I don't know if he wrote them all himself.
Yeah,
I think
his with sons other guys. Or yeah, yeah, whatever.
But
yeah.
All the ones that he wrote are the ones you want to read. Right,
right. His plumber wrote two and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Ex-girlfriend wrote one.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. That had a lot of violence in that one.
Listen, so the thing I always maybe you should tell people about what's going on, and then I'll rant.
So hold on. So Legendary Entertainment has acquired Frank Herbert's Dune. So now for those of you out there who are old enough to remember, there was a 1984 version of Dune directed by David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to beep, back it up a second here. Now, David Lynch is a phenomenal director, famous for Twin Peaks, famous for the Elephant Man
that
movie,
was a good movie.
Famous for, he did Fire Walk With Me, which was based on Twin Peaks as well. But, you know, he does all kinds of amazing work. Now, he was actually asked, the rumor has it anyways, that he was asked to do... Empire Strikes Back, George Lucas's. But he didn't do it because he decided to do Dune instead.
Right.
Now, it was panned. Nobody liked the 1984
Chris,
version of
terrible.
Dune. It was terrible. It was extremely hard to understand. Nobody understood what was going on.
Hard to watch.
Hard to watch. Then there was
Sting was in it.
Sting was in it. That's
that
right.
Kyle MacLachlan guy.
Kyle MacLachlan, who's now in
Lisa Hunt.
Her
brother Mike was in it too.
That's true. Yeah.
Patrick Stewart.
That's right. Patrick Stewart was in it. Yeah.
And of course, one of my favorite actors of all time.
Who?
Max von Sydow.
Max von Sydow.
I love him.
Wasn't he? I think he was the Emperor of the Known Universe.
He was in everywhere. Yeah. He was the emperor of everything. It's him and Christopher Plummer and Christopher Lee.
That's right.
Vie for the emperor of all time. Right? Anyway.
So David Lynch does this version. Nobody understands it. So then finally in like 2000, the year 2000, I should say, the Sci-Fi Network decides to do their own version of it in a three-part television series. But that kind of, although that was a little bit more faithful to the novel, it didn't have the same impact that the movie did.
Right.
Now, I have to say something here. So the movie, the one that,
Lynch.
David Lynch.
Yeah.
Who also did a movie called, what was it called now? Hold on. Eraserhead.
Right.
The cult movie. Uh-huh. Anyways, so David Lynch does this movie, and I think at the time he even put it under the name Alan Smithy because he didn't even want to be associated with it. So then, for some reason, they decided to do a TV version of his movie. So they take his movie, but they add like a half an hour or an hour of extra stuff to it.
Yeah.
But it actually made it a little bit more palatable. But it became this movie that's like 3 hours long. Anyways, so now it looks like Legendary Entertainment is actually finally going to do their own version of Dune. Did you know that Alexander Jodorowsky also tried to do a version of Dune back in 1973?
Wow.
There's actually a documentary out there.
Alejandro.
Uh-huh. So Alejandro Jodorowsky actually attempted to do a movie in 1973 based on Dune. And there's actually a documentary based on his failed attempt of doing Dune.
Right.
It was actually called Jodorowsky's Dune.
Now, I'm telling you one thing, though, right
okay,
now.
Right.
Just because of the history of film.
Yeah.
Okay, the history of film. 1984,
yeah.
The way the haircuts were.
Right.
The way the grain of the film was.
Yeah.
It sucked.
It sucked.
Okay.
Good.
1973.
It was even
with
worse.
The no, it would be perfect for Dune with the sepia tone beiges.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
blurriness and the desert scenes and everything like that. I think that yeah. would have been fantastic.
Okay. Actually. So it would have been amazing. So mm-hmm. with, I know this has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
That's why we're talking about it.
Kind of does, but kind of doesn't.
Well, you know, it's public service yeah. that we deliver.
Exactly. So I watched this documentary on Dune.
Uh-huh.
And so he tried to – this was like a cast of thousands.
Right.
And it had this amazing cast, including of which was Salvador Dali.
Oh!
So he tried to get Salvador Dali to play the Emperor of the Known Universe.
Uh-huh.
And Salvador Dali didn't want to do it. And so he basically said, Salvador, I'm going to pay you $1 million for 8 minutes worth of your time. 8 minutes.
Right.
So we're going to have everything all set up. All you have to do is come in, and you're going to do 8 minutes worth of work.
Uh-huh.
So with that 8 minutes worth of time, and I'm going to pay you $1 million, if you make that into what a 60-minute, a one-hour fee would be like,
uh-huh.
you're going to be the most highest-paid person ever on the planet.
In the world.
In the world.
Ever.
Ever.
And you can write, draw, you can make a painting about that.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because that would work out to be like what? Like $35 million
sure.
an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
An hour.
Uh-huh.
So he was going to be in that. And then you had, what's his name? The guy that designed the alien, H.R. Geiger,
uh-huh.
was designing all of the concepts for the ships and for the planet and all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
So it was all these amazing things. And then, of course, it gets canned. No more of that. Anyways, Dune is like, it's like this, it's like the Moby Dick's white whale. Like, it's so hard to actually finally get
it
right.
It's so huge. It's so all-encompassing.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones where, the book is just, like, off the charts.
How do you?
And anything that they've tried up till now is
So
Legendary, they got some chops.
They got chops.
You know what I mean? And so they need a big budget on this.
Yep.
They need to do it right. Dune is all about mood. Dune is all about doing it right.
Yeah.
You can't compromise on Dune. You can't have sentimentality.
No.
You can't have anything.
No.
You can't have some schmo we know.
Either. No. It has to be
Brad Pitt.
Brand new.
Everything has to be so cool. You know?
Yeah.
By the way, Sting. I thought Sting's best movie was Quadrophenia. He was the bellhop in Quadrophenia.
Was he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I don't know if I've ever seen Sting. And I saw Sting in Dune, but I don't remember if I've seen him
in Quadrophenia.
Else. Interesting.
And when you mentioned Salvador Dali and his 8-minute rule.
Yeah. Or whatever it was.
Like it reminded me of, for me, the greatest cameo role that you know, like, I'm going to, hey, guy, you know, you're bigger than life. We need you in this movie that you don't give two craps about.
Yeah.
But we just want you. And we've talked about this before. This might be the greatest piece of film in the history of comic book film.
Ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Comic book
yeah.
film. Greatest piece of film in the history of comic book film was Brando in Superman the first one.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When Christopher Reeve gets to the Fortress of Solitude and he plugs in the thing and he hears his dad talking
That's
about
right.
what happened.
Yeah,
and stuff
yeah,
like
yeah.
That.
It's amazing.
And that sepia tony funkadelic kind of projection thing.
Oh, it's
with
awesome.
Brando talking. Ah, that was a trip.
Awesome.
That was
yeah.
the best part of that movie. That was the best
Superman
2 minutes
movie.
In film.
Yeah. Two minutes of comic book film.
Comic book film.
I agree.
Ever.
I agree. Awesome.
Anyway, so exciting news for Dune. I'm a fan. Are you a fan?
I'm totally a fan. Yeah.
And,
you know what? I actually am a fan of the David Lynch version.
What the hell's wrong with you?
I know. I have problems, but I actually do like it. If you watch the whole thing,
The whole thing.
Okay, if you watch the made for TV version, it actually helps to explain some things. It actually does explain
a
few things.
Listen, if you waste your time, fool me once, shame on you.
Come
twice.
On, you don't know. I don't know who the Kuzet Satorak is. All right, listen. Let's have a quick musical interlude. We're going to come back, and we've got to talk a little bit about what's happening in the box office these days and how all that's going. But first,
some comics. We'll talk comics.
Well, I guess we have to. I suppose I don't know if you really want to. Let's go with this. Let's go with Spidey's beat for this one. Thank you. Did you like that?
You know what, so, Chris? This is what I'm going to say about that.
What's that?
It brings to mind, I don't know how to say it, so I just, why don't I just get to the point?
Get to the point.
Okay. When we all hear Spider-Man,
yeah.
You know, we've heard it our whole lives.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, we watched it as kids, and our parents watched it, and you know, it's kind of comic book music and comic book
correct.
Cartoons
yeah,
and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And when you strip away
the
identifier,
right.
which is the Spider-Man,
yeah.
Spider-Man, that's some kick-ass
that's
jazz
awesome
music
going on. That's awesome,
just
awesome,
like, just
awesome music.
If you never heard Spider-Man before, Spider-Man,
yeah.
And you just heard that, you
yeah.
go, whoa.
That's amazing.
That's swinging,
yeah, yeah.
right?
That's right. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
The beat and you know the horns in it and everything
groove,
is just awesome.
Everything.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I thought, you know what? I bet there's a lot of listeners out there.
Uh-huh.
All five of them have probably never heard that before. So that I wanted to give them a little treat.
You know, there's a positive. It was three earlier, now it's up to five.
Well, you know, we've gained a couple listeners.
That's right.
Talking about Dune. There's, you know, four people that out there. That
you know what
like
it is?
June.
It's quality programming that gets
quality.
Them here, Chris, on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster Radio, and comicbookdaily.com.
Quality.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's. Right. We got one more.
Yeah, we
more
got
things.
One more thing.
Oh,
for
two
Candy
more things.
Apple, Candy
two.
Apple Fox,
right.
sponsoring the show. Danny Champion with his Kickstarter campaign. That's all the information we really have right now. We're sending you out on a treasure hunt.
Treasure
Listen,
hunt.
We know you want to give your money away
to people
to
you've never
cause.
Met.
So we're making it as difficult as possible for you to find the person. It's like a treasure hunt.
It is a treasure hunt.
In reverse.
Because, yeah.
You have to work really hard to give somebody else your money.
That's but you still get something in the end.
Right.
Yeah.
You get something in the end, all right.
all right. We need to talk about. Do you want to talk about Fantastic Beasts, or do you want to talk about specially priced titles?
We'll quickly touch on the Beasts.
All right.
Which was the flick there from what's that?
J.K. Rowling's
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
So
cool, Gov. You like wizards, do you?
Right then. So I don't think that was Harry Potter. I think that was Michael Caine.
No,
and Alfie.
If you want to talk like Michael Caine, you have to talk in three-syllable words.
Words, right. Right.
Right.
So I don't know where I am now. Harry Potter, this whole thing, Fantastic Beasts, they didn't think it did as well as it should have. If it was a Harry Potter movie, it would have done better.
Right.
That kind
right.
of thing. So,
well, it's meant to be a prequel, right?
Yeah.
So,
but, hey. So?
It doesn't have dreamy Harry Potter in it.
Oh,
he's so dreamy.
He's so dreamy. He's what's the word? I guess it was dreamy, wasn't it?
But you know what? Okay, so hold on. So
he's the bee's knees.
Fantastic Beasts did
75 mil.
Did 75
but it did
mil.
Gangbusters overseas at 143 mil.
Right.
So that's good. But it's good to see our boy Doc Strange kicking it. It only made 17.6 mil this last week, but it's up to a domestic $181 million.
Domestic.
Which is fantastic. I think at this moment it's the ninth movie of the year,
yeah.
which there's a lot of big movies like
yeah.
It's still got a little bit more legs and I like the way Doctor Strange came out of the gate, the way Doctor Strange held it. With the Harry Potter thing, I don't know, like you say it's a prequel, so but, I mean, obviously there's pent-up demand for anything Harry Potter because that's good money right there.
Right, absolutely, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Especially worldwide.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that movie had a debut worldwide of $218 million.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty darn
good. Doctor Strange now has a worldwide total of $571 million.
Nice.
Which is
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like
That'll keep the wizard in some potions, won't it?
it'll keep him with a little bit of potions.
Fantastic. Good news. I like here at this show, we love passing on news of comic book culture and popular culture related movies doing well at the
yeah,
box
success.
Office. That's fantastic. That means there's an appetite for this stuff, and that's what we want to see.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, your local comic book shop will have products related to those movies.
Correct. Right. Very good.
Let's talk about local comic book shops.
Let's
talk about what Image Comics is doing out in February.
Okay.
They're doing a fantastic thing to celebrate 25 years. Robert Kirkman's doing a 25-cent Walking Dead number 163.
Nice.
Invincible number 133 will be out with Ryan Ottley coming back to
who
draw.
Was the part creator, original artist.
They're starting a 12-issue story arc with 133. That will also be coming out in February at 25 cents.
Nice.
And Outcast number 25, drawn by Paul Aztecia.
Azacita?
Okay, that.
Sure. I like Aztecia.
And they're launching a new story arc with that as well. So what Image is doing is they're taking three of their best properties, offering concurrent, valid, important arc launching title, issues at 25 cents each.
Right. New stories, not reprints.
Oh, fantastic.
Awesome.
For the fans.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Jump on points. But also just, you know, maybe, you know, you're reading Walking Dead and you stopped at issue 89.
Right, yeah, right.
For a quarter, you're going to check the new one in.
It's
start of a new arc and, you know, it can latch you back in.
Yeah, sucker you back in.
That's fantastic. And then I keep going on about comic shop news, and I see what Marvel's doing, and I pull that wah.
I know. Okay, but hold on. Okay, let's tell them. Let's tell the audience what is happening.
Okay, go ahead.
So Marvel is celebrating Wolverine in general, and they're going to come up with 10 $1 books. They're calling them the True Believer titles.
Right.
Reprinting some of Wolverine's most iconic adventures. So you're going to get, for a buck, you can get the very first Wolverine Hulk story, which was Hulk 181.
Hey, will they include the last panel of 180?
And that's it. That's all they're going to have. That's your whole story. You get to pay a dollar for that.
No, I meant
the last page
of 180 where you see him
coming,
and the first page of 182
but
where you see him
going.
Wouldn't
it be great if it's like, you know, they gave you a book
and
it had one page in it?
180.
Well, here you go.
Yeah, here you go. Here's the first Prince Wolverine. Only for a buck.
Wolverine, one page.
Enjoy.
So then you get Wolverine Save the Tiger, which is reprinted from Marvel Comics Presents number 1 of 3.
Mm-hmm.
Weapon X, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, 10 different books here that all are reprinted for a dollar, which I think is a great idea. Okay. I know what you're going to say. That here's Marvel reprinting stuff, not new stories, but reprinting stuff, and they're charging $1.
The problem is this. For fans of Wolverine, I'm sorry, but for fans of Wolverine, you don't want to read the 1975 version of Wolverine. That's not going to get you to want to read the new Wolverine. Reading a dated Wolverine story isn't going to excite you about the current Wolverine. What I'm saying is Logan and the new Wolverine and whatever stories that they got going on right now. It would have been better, like Image did, where they launch a cool new arc and they offer the first one. Okay, if you want to be cheap and you don't want to give it for 25 cents, offer it for a dollar.
Right.
But, you know, do it. Like, Get them involved in who the character is now.
I agree.
You know, the young guys, especially the young people that we want to attract with these things.
Well,
they don't care about 1979 Wolverine.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to say you're right, and you're wrong. So Wolverine,
I love it when I'm right.
Marvel
wrong.
Isn't really doing anything to try to there's no. It's not like the 50th anniversary of Wolverine. They're just trying to promote the new movie. So, however, having said that, they could have done a better job of actually putting out new comics that are important.
Hey, listen,
and are concurrent.
February is Heart Month, Black History Month, Valentine's Day Month, and the month to go into your local comic book shop and pick up some really cheap comics, reprints, and new story arcs. So be excited by February 2017. Hey, comic culture was produced, engineered, performed, everything by Chris Owen. I was here too.
Yeah, and, Walt was here, yeah.
We're on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio. We're on comicbookdaily.com. We're at getthepointradio.com. And we encourage you to go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a wonderful day.